This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. The Haw River winds from its source in Forsyth County, east of Winston-Salem, through Burlington, Saxapaw, and Pittsboro, and then finds its way to Jordan Lake. It's a source of drinking water for tens of thousands of Triangle residents and a place of refuge for wildlife and nature lovers. But as late as the 1970s, the once pristine Haw was thick with pollution from textile mills that dumped their industrial waste directly into its waters. Environmentalists and policymakers joined to make the Haw clean again, but the work isn't finished. Here with me to talk about the Haw River is Ann Kassebaum. She's an associate professor of English at Elon University and author of the new book, Down Along the Haw. And Elaine Kioso is executive director of the Haw River Assembly. Mark Chilton is mayor of Carrboro and author of an historical atlas of the Haw River. Welcome to all of you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And let's give us some facts and figures. How long is the Haw and what's its course?
Well, the Haw River is 110 miles long, and just about 3 to 4 miles of it comes out the other side of Jordan Lake and joins with the Deep River to become the Cape Fear. So most of what we call the Jordan Lake watershed is also the Haw River watershed, and it's about 1,700 square miles of land that drains into it.
That's an important point that you make, because if I say river, we all think crooked line. Right? The picture that comes to mind is a crooked line on a map, but it really is the 1,700 square miles of watershed, streams and tributaries, and the land on which those waters drain. That's the important part for us.
Yes, and about, we think from the last census, about 900 million people. And actually, not tens of thousands drinking from it, but maybe 300,000 to 400,000, depending on droughts, when more people start drinking from Jordan Lake.
And Mark, tell us a little bit about the history of this river.
Well, you know, the Haw River from earliest times, from prehistoric times, has been an important resource for the people who live in North Carolina. The Native Americans used it for fish traps and sources of drinking water. Early settlers built grist mills and sawmills on the banks of the Haw River. And later, after the Industrial Revolution came, it was a source of power for textile mills and furniture mills in North Carolina. So there's been a long history of interaction between humans and the Haw River.
And Anne, what got you interested in writing the story of the river? I know, Mark, you've kind of given us the atlas and a picture of the river in your book. And Anne, you give us a kind of story of the people along the way as well.
I think, like most people, I'm drawn to rivers. And coming down here from the north, that's where I felt at home.
There are some great stories, too, along the river, families. In fact, stories that go back to the American Revolution.
You're thinking of the Trollingers?
I am. Right. The Trollinger family.
Well, the Trollingers were a feisty crew, and they're still a very lively family. The first Trollingers came in 1745. 2 years later, they built a grist mill. And when you consider they come into a wilderness, that's amazing. They spoke German. If you had arrived in Haw River in 1750, you would have heard only German. It would have been hard to find someone who spoke English. They had a run-in with the Moravian brethren who had camped on the wrong side of their ford. They felt like they owned it. And Adam Trollinger was rather drunk when he handled the situation, but that all got resolved. During the Revolution, his son was tied to a tree and was so angry that he sent his son.
Now, this is in Cornwallis. These are British troops that did the tie-in.
Right, right.
That's, yeah.
And he was so angry he sent his son and his accompanying slave off to fight in the Revolution.
Start their own little war against Cornwallis. So it's got a history in terms of, it goes certainly, Native Americans found this a valuable resource. Europeans came in and settled. First Moravians, English began to settle. And that settlement led to grist mills and textile mills, Elaine. And therein lies some of the problem.
Just one other thing was this was a watershed that had a large population of Quakers in Guilford and Alamance counties particularly. And so it became a real one of the real routes on the Underground Railroad, because of the Quaker safe houses that were in the area around the Haw River. So kind of another interesting story about.
And tell us about, and then it becomes, because of the textile mills along the way, that's when the pollution starts. Tell us how serious a problem it became.
Yeah, well, you know, there was a time when we saw rivers as maybe being able to always just carry away any pollution you put into it, that sense of away. And so these factories would just dump their dyes, and not just the dyes, but leftover junk from the cotton, you know, all of that just going right into the rivers. And all of us, Mark and Ann and I, have all heard stories from old-timers that talk about knowing what color the cloth was being dyed in the mill from the color of the river downstream that day. So it was pretty bad.
Now, and in terms of its impact on the river, because again, the notion was, well, it's going to go away, but it didn't. A lot of it settled. What was, over time, by say the middle of the 20th century, what was the condition of the river?
It was very bad. People talk about how it smelled. By the time I settled on the Haw River in the 1970s, it was still pretty bad. And there was some of those mills had started to close down, but there was a lot more human population, including wastewater. Hmm. So by the 70s, right, we're talking about 1972, the Federal Clean Water Act, that's where we really start seeing
and,
the change.
And how big a change did it make? How much impact did
yeah,
it make?
Yeah, not overnight. Hmm. You know, Nixon signed it in 72. It takes a while for states to implement, but definitely we started seeing a change, and it meant, you know, anything that was coming out of a pipe was not going to just be allowed to just come out untreated like that.
Mark, how important is it to see this? We talked about this river not being just a river but a watershed, and of course at first nobody sees it that way. It's whatever it's doing for them at their little part. When did that idea start to change, the idea that this has a big impact beyond just what you're sitting next to?
Well, you know, as the Federal Clean Water Act gradually improved the pollution flows out of factories into our streams and rivers, including the Haw, it began to be basically the number one source of pollution began to be no longer factories and those sorts of things. The number one source of pollution today in the Haw River is from our towns and cities and counties. It's the stormwater that washes off of our streets, off of our Walmart parking lots, and all the other impervious surfaces that we build in our watershed. And I think it's this fact that when large rainstorms come and pick up battery acid, lead, motor oil, all the things that are all the pollutants that are found on our streets, that's really the biggest source of the problem. And that is at every, you know, that problem exists in every corner of the watershed.
Now, what's the answer to that?
Well, modern technology has been developed to that allows for us to build in stormwater control devices into parking lots and into new developments as they happen that essentially trap many of those pollutants and prevent them from passing into the streams and down into the Haw River. And so those devices, BMPs as they're called, do a good job of protecting the quality of the water that runs off of these new developments. But the fact is that most of those new developments are really only in the last 10 years, and there's lots and lots of other impervious surfaces in all throughout the Haw's watershed that were built long enough ago that they don't benefit from those features.
Is there a way to go back and capture that water? Obviously, it would cost something, but when you compare the cost of cleanup, it's probably much less.
It is possible to do that, and that's something that's gradually happening. The North Carolina Environmental Management Commission attempted to put into place some very tough new rules 2 years ago, I guess, to help protect the quality of water in Jordan Lake in particular, which is a part of the Haw River. I think real estate industry interests in Raleigh convinced the legislature to undo parts of those rules. So we have some of those new rules coming into play right now, and you know that will gradually help the quality of water, but it's definitely not going nearly as far as it could.
And you and Mark and Elaine are not the first to be interested in the Haw. There's a man named John Lawson who is very interested in finding out more about this.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned him, because it's good to remember when we talk about pollution what the Haw is. And it was a major draw for the Native Americans and for the settlers who come here. And Lawson was one of them. He was told when he was standing by the Thames one day, go to North Carolina. And
that's my advice to everybody.
Yeah.
And when was this?
This was in 1702. And North Carolina had gotten a lot of good propaganda. Robert Horne had written in 1666, you know, there are as brave rivers there as any in the world and stored with great abundance. And that's what he found. He, like others, was terribly impressed with the Haw. The words they used were interesting, and he used these words, clear, limpid. It was absolutely crystal clear. The natural state of this river is not brown. He talked about the fish available. He talked about delicious. And it's good to remember, people drank rivers. They talked about the water quality in that way. And they loved the rocks in the river. Good for building. He liked that too. But he found his first crossing very cold. It was winter and it was rough.
Elaine, can we get back to that state? Can the river ever find its way back?
Well, with 900,000 people, perhaps we're not in a place where we're going to see a pristine river, but a large number of our creeks and Jordan Lake itself and parts of the river are on the EPA's impaired waters list. And the state of North Carolina, helped by river organizations like the Haw River Assembly. And I just want to say every river in North Carolina has people that care about it. So we're not unusual in that way. There's a lot of dedicated river lovers. But together we do find you can walk a creek and see where the sources of pollution are. You can do monitoring. You can understand what it would take to clean it up. And it is possible to do that, maybe not to a pristine state, but get it off this impaired waters list so it's safe. And I think that one of the things the Haw River Assembly does is offer, we've been doing this since 1995, we teach people how to be citizen scientists and monitor creeks near where they live or a stretch of the river and really be watchdogs. And that's tremendous information, very, very helpful to us and the state in terms of cleaning up these waters.
Well, and we've been talking about undoing some of the damage that's already been done, but now there are new challenges, particularly with regard to fracking to the Haw.
Yes. Unfortunately, our watershed sits in the part of the state where the Triassic Basin is. And so we're talking about coming up from the southern part of North Carolina, but getting into our watershed above Lee County, so eastern Chatham County, eastern Orange County, and right up through Durham is this underlying shale basin that may have natural gas trapped in it. And, of course, in North Carolina right now, it's not legal to do this fracking, hydrofracturing. But we have a lot of legislators in the natural gas industry very excited about starting. So,
what do you think would be the impact on the Haw?
Tremendous water impact, more than anything. It takes millions of gallons just to frack one site, and then you've got contaminated water after you've done that. So you're sending chemicals down at high pressure with the water to break the rock. So not only is the water coming back up with these chemicals in it now, but it also has tainted with the petroleum products and whatever else was down in the ground. In Pennsylvania, where they do a lot of fracking, they found radiations coming back up with that water. So then what do you do with the water? We don't have a solution yet. People that live nearby with drinking water wells, some of those wells have been contaminated. So we want to be very careful in North Carolina before we allow this industry.
It's something to think about because, you will hear some people tell you, and it's true, there are natural contaminants and toxins in our soil and in the ground. But what fracking does is concentrates them.
Yeah,
so it puts a lot of them together all in one place.
Right, and taking it from very deep underground, right.
That had already been kind of outside. So, and that is part of it, Mark. I guess the question of the water supply pressure, not only from potentially from fracking, but just population growth.
You know, all of the statistics show that the Triangle area and indeed the whole Piedmont of North Carolina are expected to continue growing dramatically over the next 20 or 30 years. And the fact is that there are very few or really no meaningful additional opportunities to build reservoirs in the Piedmont of North Carolina. The Jordan Lake took almost 75 years to get planned and built, and there really aren't other sites to build similar reservoirs in the future. So I think one of the things that I've really been advocating for in my position as mayor of Carrboro is that all of us throughout North Carolina need to do a lot better job of planning for the future when it comes to our water supply. We're not simply going to be able to count on building more and more reservoirs in the future. We've got to find ways to use water more efficiently and to conserve water so that we'll have adequate water supplies for those of us who already live in North Carolina, let alone the folks who are planning on coming here.
I want to thank each one of you for being on the program today. So great to talk with you.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks for having us, Frank.
My guests are Ann Kassebaum, an associate professor of English at Elon University and author of the new book, Down Along the Haw. Elaine Chioso is the executive director of the Haw River Assembly. Mark Chilton's the mayor of Carrboro and author of an historical atlas of the Haw River. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. Our website is stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados, Ginny Mueller, the intern. Robin Copley is our technical director, managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.